This podcast is sponsored by Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Mr. Robot 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
Every day we change the world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast from Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 10, titled Episode 3.9, Shutdown-R. This is the season finale. So this is the last podcast we're going to be doing. I don't think we're doing a wrap-up. So what do you think of this episode?
This gave me almost nothing from what I wanted in my grandiose list of things from last episode, but yet I found it very satisfying.
I thought it gave me so much that I wanted from the season as a whole.
I thought that they really needed to come down and like come out with what White Rose's plan actually is.
Okay.
And the fact, but I will say that if you had told me that after this episode they would essentially kick that can down to season 4, I would have been mad. But the way it all worked out, I thought it was just great. We found things. We got answers to things I didn't know that I wanted to know. Like that Irving used to be White Rose's lover. She used to be the Grant before she had Grant. He used to be the Grant before she had Grant. I mean, there's this really cool big idea kind of stuff. Great acting, just masterful editing.
Yeah,
the way they wove Angela's revelation of Price being her father with Elliot's high stakes negotiating with the Dark Army and the fall of Dom was just brilliant.
Yeah.
Like that lives and dies by how well you can edit it and lay a musical track to kind of ties it all together. And I thought it was great. I love the fact that like all the time travel and stuff paid off, but not in the way that you conventionally think of it as paying off.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, it was more about the 5-9 hack itself.
Yeah, no, and a lot of people like there's a lot of reaction of like, oh well, this returns us to season 1. But yes, it's almost like but
it's an evolution from where Elliot was at before, because he knows so much more about the overall power structure of the world.
The enemy is much clearer now.
Right, the enemy is much clearer, and also he has come to terms with his own inner demons, I think, to a certain degree.
He's made peace with Mr. Robot, if that's a long-lasting peace or what will come of it.
And that's super important, because
yes,
those
is.
Are two halves of himself that have always been warring and holding him back.
Yes,
what
it
can
is.
He do now that he's free of those shackles?
That's a good question.
And it's exciting, honestly. Like, the ending of this is so exciting for season 4.
And also, there's a couple other questions that I've expressed skepticism of how Elliot can be this much better of a hacker than everyone else. And I was gratified that Grant asked the question, like, what makes you think you're better than an army of everyone exactly like you? And he goes, because I am. And I'm like,
right.
Fuck yeah, I actually got caught up in the moment. Like,
okay, yeah.
I guess that this is, it's like Zod asking the same thing of Superman. Well, he's fucking Superman. Mr. Robot is Superman in the hacking world, and I need to get on board with that.
Yeah, and the other thing that I guess happens that doesn't quite happen here, but in a way it does, is the FBI potentially working with Elliot.
Not in the way anyone ever postulated.
Right, like, would have never guessed this. The Dom was just going to sign into the Sentinel and hand over the keys, but also not really want to work with Elliot.
It won't be a moment of triumph or like, fuck yeah, they're working together. It's going to be very much under duress.
The future, the possibilities is what I'm excited about. Because with Dom, we know Dom's attitude toward this whole thing. She's only going to go along with it, in my mind, for as long as she can keep up the ruse and actually work against White Rose or the Dark Army.
Yeah.
And in that, I'm excited because that will be her, essentially the FBI working with Elliot.
Yeah.
And their powers combined might be enough to do this.
And man, Grace Gummer is just really good.
Oh man, that scene where she tells off Darlene.
I felt it.
Fuck me. Yeah, that was good.
It wasn't even aimed at me, and I felt it. It's almost like she's Meryl Streep's daughter or something.
Kind of like that, yeah.
I don't know. But no, I thought it was really good. Also, Bobby Cannavale, like the one, I've loved his performance, but like, to me, you're almost wasting him if you don't let him get completely unhinged and like, holy shit, this is mid season three Boardwalk Empire Bobby Cannavale just going to town on Santiago. It was,
like,
despite having some of the most god awful wound CGI I've ever seen in my life, that scene just worked.
Yeah, I absolutely love when they pull out and you see the wide shot as Dom walks away and he's just going just to town on Santiago on what's clearly a dummy, but they like, go for it.
Like the only reason that thing works is because of Grace Gummer and Bobby Cannavale, and they just elevate that shit and really make you feel it.
They do.
The desperation and the fury and like, you know, like what is this Irving guy's damage?
And how exactly does he have you think of organized crime and you don't think of walking away as an option.
Yeah, how ever. Do you do that?
How did he manage that, especially with someone as powerful as White Rose?
Bobby got that good D.
Got that good D.
He laid it he laid it so nice that
God, we just watched the mattress sketch from Key and Peele the other night. Testing the mattresses.
Are you working your way through Key and Peele?
My girlfriend is, and I catch one every once in a while.
It's pretty rewarding. There you got some.
So I got that good D. It really resonates with me right now.
Who's got that good D? All right. Should we talk about the episode?
Yeah, for sure.
It's the time in a podcast where we do housekeeping. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of house left to keep. It's the end of the year. We're about ready to ride off in the sunset. Walking Dead's gone. Mr. Robot's gone. We did have a couple things drop. Just last night, Jim and I saw Star Wars 8.
Yeah.
The Last Jedi. And one of us loved it, and one of us had a lot of complicated feelings about it. Which one is which? Who can know? Well, you can if you go to baldmove.com and download the relevant podcast. And if you're a club member, you can get our detailed, spoilery thoughts about it. We also have, throughout the whole month of December, we've been doing this Mary Culkin Keatmas. We've revealed the first three movies. We started off with the Michael Keaton Jack Frost, then the Macaulay Culkin Home Alone, back to Keaton for Batman Returns. What will be next week? What will be Christmas? I don't know. I'm so excited.
Could be anything.
That package has been rattling underneath the tree for many weeks now. Can't wait for you guys to open it. And just in general, thanks for those of you who have supported us. Thanks for those of you who have just listened to us. We're going to be back for 2018 with more great shows, more great movies, more great whatever Bald Move things that we do.
Do it all.
We got a lot of plans, and we can't wait to get recharged, spend a little time with our friends and family, and come back for y'all. So you can find all that stuff I talked about on baldmove.com. Check it out.
So we start off with the Dark Army searching for Elliot in his apartment, but he is hiding next door, as he does.
In Shayla's apartment.
Yep. Darlene is not responding to his texts, so he goes to their rendezvous, which we find out later is the arcade.
I love Chekhov's blank CD over the logo.
Yes. Uh-huh.
They've done a lot. This is kind of a hallmark, using the Mr. Robot logo as like the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm like, blank CD, I wonder what that means. And obviously it directly pays off with that's what Mr. Robot used to encode the key log.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some suggestion online that maybe Darlene is essentially Elliot's blank CD for himself.
Because that's saying like, I remember for you.
I'm the one who remembers for you. Like when he's ready to complete something and he burns it off and he wipes his image. Like she is his blank CD. And I kind of like the way they, if that's intentional, even if it's not intentional, it pays off at the end of the episode. But I also like the fact that maybe Darlene herself is Elliot's personal backup system, because he's such an unreliable narrator and such a. On the other hand, if you want to interpret it less charitably, potentially she's got a big vulnerability in him, because he trusts her implicitly to kind of like be the historian of his life. And what if she is not an unreliable narrator, but just an unreliable historian? That's it's kind of like. You could be very easy to manipulate him in a John G. kind of Lenny kind of memento way.
It would be,
But no, I liked it. I liked it a lot.
I don't know. So far, I guess I trust Darlene as well. She hasn't shown me anything that says that she's really going to actively work against Elliot. So.
Yeah. Also, I guess this episode gave me hope that you could actually hide from the Dark Army. Like, mm-hmm. the Dark Army's resources are not limitless, and if you lived completely off the grid, they're kind of helpless.
Okay. Yeah.
So, like, why would they possibly know that Elliot... You know, it kind of seems silly that they're breaking this apartment and Elliot's literally right next door, but, like, what possible reason would the Dark Army have to suspect that he would be in the apartment next door?
Sure.
And, yeah. like, is the Dark Army going to knock on the door and assassinate everyone in the... So, like, they do have limits.
It shows that they don't know everything.
Right.
Which is nice, because up until now, they've been kind of omnipotent and omnipresent.
It's their weak point, though. Like, if you can successfully keep yourself off the grid and hidden, then there's nothing they can really do. Like, once you carelessly let your location be known, then mm-hmm. they can descend on you with the hammer of God.
Which is a little scary, because... Elliot is only powerful online when connected.
Yeah,
so,
it's like a really unbreakable Mr. Glass situation.
Right.
Their strengths and weaknesses are well suited to be good foils for each other.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out in season
four. I'm hoping it's going to be a really entertaining cat and mouse, especially since White Rose is definitely not done with Mr. Anderson.
No.
Or Alderson. No.
Uh-huh.
I got my hacker movies confused.
It seems that way, yeah. So we go on to Santiago kidnapping Darlene and taking her down to his car. And Dom has to give him the report that she wrote and finds it weird that he's not in. She finds Darlene's missing as well, and the camera has been disabled. And she goes down to the parking garage where she finds Santiago and confronts him about this whole weird situation. And Santiago knocks her out.
Sucker
knocks
her
the fuck out.
It was a good punch.
The sound effects really helped.
The way they filmed it and how, like...
He pulled it. I mean, he obviously pulled that punch, but...
Right. But, like, the way she just dropped, like, a bag of rocks.
Yeah.
It was... She just went instant limp and, like, her whole body kind of twisted. It was... I rewound and watched a couple times. It was a really, really good punch. Really good.
It was.
Like, very, very vicious and traitorous act by Santiago.
Yeah, and it does kind of come out of nowhere. He's talking about, oh, there's all these cameras around. I couldn't possibly... Boom.
I mean, obviously, that's the mess that he needs the Dark Army to clean up.
Yes. Yep. All right, we go to Darlene, who is... Wait, we don't go to Darlene. Darlene isn't at the rendezvous when Elliot shows up. And Elliot assumes she's with the Dark Army, but he doesn't have time to trace her location. He's kind of panicking here.
Because he's like got so much access to Dark Army, it's like too much. It's a needle in the haystack. He mentions the dozens of operatives in New York, and if he has to trace which ones are assigned to Darlene's ET, he just doesn't have time.
No, and he knows it's all his fault, and he's kind of regretting everything and trashing the arcade here, knowing that his sister might die.
Cuts his hand pretty badly on the popcorn machine.
Yeah.
Which I wondered, because, you know, that was a big smoking gun from season one, the gun in and around the popcorn. I wonder mm-hmm. if him busting the glass on that, with them rebooting back to season one, if that's going to be significant. Like, did he...
Yeah, I was trying to come up with some explanation for that
shot. He left DNA behind, but, like, his DNA would be all over that place, even after the FBI cleaned it up, I imagine.
Probably.
Why is no one monitoring that location now?
It's old. It's old intel.
Yeah, but... It just feels like that whoever, like, you know, someone would shut the power off to or whatever. Like, you know, it's got this, like, loophole situation that it still has power and it still has internet and all that stuff. Like, wouldn't someone shut that, you know, now that they've seen what a huge backdoor it is?
At least shut down the power to that place.
It seems pretty risky to keep returning to the scene of the crime.
Yep. So he goes to the Ferris wheel, where he's been many times before, where he kind of talked to Mr. Robot the first time. Like, in season one, I know I saw him on this Ferris wheel.
Right.
He wants to get some info from Mr. Robot, and he tells Elliot that the FBI has a mole, which he kind of already knew, you know? Like, it didn't seem like he got much new information here.
He found out it was Santiago by following the clue, because they went to Santiago's apartment, right?
They do, yeah.
But no, I like this, like, Mr. Robot asserting that you can't treat me like Alibaba and just rub the lamp and then shut me away when you're done extracting information. This is, like, the first... Yeah. It's not the first, it's just the latest evolution in the relationship. They're both ready to end this Cold War they've been in since the end of season one.
Yeah, and Elliot talks about, you know, being scared of Mr. Robot, how he's... he's worried that if he talks to Mr. Robot, he'll be manipulated by him. He'll do things he doesn't want to do, and so he tried to shut him off.
But so it's so awesome, the revelation of him realizing that as much as he is in Mr. Robot,
yeah,
or as much as Mr. Robot's in him, he's a Mr. Robot. So, like, fundamentally, you can trust this character to not do something completely fucking crazy.
Right, which comes full circle at the very end.
He shouldn't do anything that you can't live with.
Yeah.
So, in that case, you should be working together all the time.
Right. No, it makes total sense. And it comes full circle, like I said, at the very end, where Mr. Robot does have the backup plan that Elliot would have.
Because that's what he would do.
Right.
Right.
Mr. Robot is as much contained by Elliot as Elliot is by Mr. Robot.
Which is elementary and kind of obvious, but like the show's done a good, you know, it's like the whole, like, you can really buy into the idea that Mr. Robot's is totally separate dude. But
and
the show constantly reminds
scared.
You that, like, they're not different. They are the same
right.
person.
And it's hard. I can understand why Elliot doesn't quite get that, because he's very scared of the things he's doing as Mr. Robot.
Right.
And he doesn't know what control he has over Mr. Robot.
And vice versa. Mr. Robot's very frustrated with the lack of control he has on Elliot.
Sure. So Dom wakes up in Santiago's car as he's driving her and Darlene somewhere, which we don't quite know yet. Dom can't believe how Santiago has behaved, and he insists that nothing would ever make her betray everything she believes. Santiago, you know, gives her the speech about, oh, I had no choice. The Dark Army has a lot of leverage on me. And we immediately find out what they have over him when we cut to the Renaissance photo, which is quite obviously the thing that they're holding over his head. We will release this to the public.
I understand that, like, his mom's got some sort of cancer. Now, I don't know
well,
what...
Well, I think they've got the same thing over Santiago that they use as leverage over Dom, which is
so it's
family.
Not about his mom's cancer. It's more about just the fact that he's got this mom that he cares about.
Yeah, that they would harm if he were to
It's funny
them.
Because, like, I was completely on Dom's side. I'm like, no, Dom would never turn traitor like this. And then by the end of the episode, I'm like, oh, okay, I buy this.
I get it. Yep.
Yeah, Bobby Cannavale just chopped a man alive.
Yeah.
That's some frightening shit. I have more to say about that moral conundrum, but
I really like the setup here.
Yeah,
you know,
you're just like,
Dom's
there's
defiance.
Yeah, fuck yeah, Dom, give it to this shit bag,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And I like how by the end, like you said, it's twisted. You know, Dom here very much believes what she's saying.
Yeah, and I think I felt like I saw a lot of viewers falling into the trap of taking all the information we know. And being like, oh, Dom's so stupid. How could she have not seen? And like, really? You're going to accuse your supervisor of helping out a terrorist? Like, I felt like she was ready to go. Like, that's what the whole thing about, well, let's talk to the ASIC, you know, yeah. or the ADIC. I feel like she had finally got there, but she was just a half step too late. And like, you know, what would it take for you to walk in on your boss to decide, like, right then and there you're going to go to the cops on him?
Right.
Like, what if you're wrong, you know? And
yeah, you burn your own life down.
Especially
That's
talking
the
about
thing.
The FBI where, like, you know, I've always heard that FBI, like, the background checks they put you through is fucking intense
mm-hmm.
because they're trying to find people that could be have leverage put against them because it's a very
right.
important role. A federal investigation role is... You know, it's one of the things that safeguards our democracy, an independent and like investigation and prosecutorial branch. So you wouldn't just immediately leap to, oh, this guy's fucking colluding with an international band of terrorist hackers.
Right. It's so beyond the pale to even consider. And then,
yeah. And then even
right,
she has trouble processing in the car. Like, she's like almost sick about, like, oh my God, this is the raid in China. This is.
Yeah.
Cisco, this is like all these times we punched ourselves in the face. It's because of you.
And it's key what you said about, like, what if she's wrong? Because this speech, this withering speech that she gives to Darlene, she'd have to look in the mirror and give herself that speech if she was wrong about it.
Right.
That she would burn her own career to the ground. Her own life would be ruined by herself.
Right.
It's not an easy choice to make. And I think Dom has been, in my opinion, realistically getting more and more fed up with the situation and more suspicious, and now it comes to a head, and it felt right.
And hand in hand, like I've praised all season long, Santiago has always done this really great job of just like, how do you tell the difference between a dirty cop and someone who is just so protective of their own career?
Yeah.
And wants to get all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. Like, I felt like he's really walked that line up until this last week, and
where he was caught red-handed.
Now the jig is up.
Yeah,
but that's why Dom is in the back of this car with their hands cuffed,
for sure. Mr. Robot and Elliot search Santiago's house for anything that would lead them to Darlene. Mr. Robot finds a red wheelbarrow flyer with a code on it, but that kind of goes nowhere because Irving shows up to take them somewhere.
Right.
Did you see what this code was all about?
Yeah, it's
first of all, are they seriously using a fucking Caesar cipher to send codes?
I thought
they're just letter shifting here. That can't be it.
No, there was so
A is 1, B is 2, C is 3.
It does eventually boil down to a Caesar cipher, but you have to do a little bit more work before then, I thought.
What was it exactly? I don't know.
The quote is, another one got caught today. It's all over the papers. Teenager arrested in computer crime scandal. Hacker arrested after bank tampering. Damn kids, they're all alike.
Which, it's the movie Hackers.
Which is also the...
Joey got arrested.
It's the opening statement of the Hacker Manifesto, which was a very famous editorial written in Freak magazine back in the 80s after Mentor, which was a famous, you know, mid-80s hacker, got arrested.
Uh-huh.
And it's his kind of statement about, like, you know, did I really commit a crime? And if I did, this is, like, how I got to be the place where I'm at.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just a cool Easter egg, because, like, obviously I don't think Santiago gives a shit about the Hacker's Manifesto,
right?
But no, it's kind of a cool little Easter egg.
So one thing confused me in this, aside from the Renaissance photo of Santiago, we're treated to a scene of simultaneous searching of this place by both Mr. Robot and Elliot, which was interesting to me because we know that they're one person, one physical person.
Oh, I got a bigger what the fuck later on in the episode.
Okay. That surprised me, I guess. But
yeah. The fact that Mr. Robot was aware of, like, that's him subconsciously aware of, like, someone entering the room, like, because I've been aware of that. Like, there's something.
Yeah.
It's like a sixth sense. Like, when someone comes in a room, it's like something about the acoustics change, or like it's surprising how aware you can be that something else has entered the room.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a couple of really blurring the lines between Mr. Robot being a real person and not in this episode. I also really like the meta commentary where Irving talks about, yeah, something can have a mediocre beginning or middle, but it has to have a wow ending, which I feel like is a little bit of meta commentary about the criticism of Mr. Robot
for season 2.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, maybe season 2's but like, this is fire, and wait until the ending. We got like to me, this is Sam Esmail saying, if I deliver anything less than a wow ending, then I can be pilloried in public and I won't have anything to say about it.
Well, he delivered for me anyway.
Well, I'm not No. I'm saying this about
the entire series.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
This season, this microcosm, he definitely delivered on.
No, season 3, like, after this
Holy
episode,
shit, it's been good.
We'll have to wait to see how it shakes out in the Baldies, but I kind of think this might get to number 2 spot.
This is the best season of Mr. Robot.
But it's real. Like, I feel like it. I might like it better than The Deuce. I might like it better than Stranger Things. Those are right now, that was the top 3 until Mr. Robot came out of nowhere to start threatening.
Sure.
Like, if it's not 2 or 3, it's going to be number 4 in the Baldies for me.
Okay. But I think, to my mind, this is the best season of Mr. Robot.
Oh, yeah.
It course corrected for all the stuff that I didn't like about season 2.
It had a minor hitch last episode, but what I don't even think is a hitch after you consider the entire season. Like, season 1, I felt like the last 2 episodes really drug because it didn't feel like Sam Esmail was ready to drop the next thing yet.
Yeah.
And honestly, that hungover continued throughout the entire second season.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the second season is a waste, because, like, I feel like he had to explore that space with Mr. Robot and Elliot to get him to this. But, you know.
I just think there was a different way that season 2 could have been executed.
Agreed.
While still conveying the same information that would have entertained me more. But a lot of people love it.
It does seem like that's
very divisive.
I was going to say, it seems like that's a pretty big divide between whether you still think season 1 is the best or you think season 3 is the best.
Yeah, I mean, everybody I've seen has said season 3 was awesome. Nobody's out there like, oh, it's a follow-up to season 2 and it sucks just as hard or worse or anything. it's all been positive. So, yeah.
And it's so damn bad because, like, this show, it started with a 70 share or a 0.7 rating.
Oh, man.
And it's down to 0.4.
Yeah. That means, for people who don't know, 400,000 people watching
households,
it?
Households, yeah, apparently. Which, that's not great.
It sucks. I don't know what the Amazon Prime numbers are.
Don't freak out because it did get renewed for season 4. So yeah. No matter what, we are getting another season.
I mean, this is USA's Halt and Catch Fire, where it's nobody's watching it, but they're going to keep it on because it's critically acclaimed and it's one of the coolest things they've got
going.
It's got a real
potential to make some, because that's the other thing is when they do this, they hope that it gets some critical and Emmy buzz that generates them some notice.
I feel like they made a mistake by not having Netflix pick this up, by making it an Amazon thing.
Oh. Yeah, not giving the first 2 seasons to Netflix so people can just binge it. Yeah.
Because you kind of, it's hard, not impossible, but hard to jump into season 3.
It'd be real hard to just jump into season 3 and know what the fuck is going on.
They do pretty well with the previously ons, but yeah, that it's not one of those shows where you can just pick it up very easily.
Right, because it does more than many shows I've seen really build on the language it uses before.
Yeah.
Like, it takes all of season 1 to reveal the split between Mr. Robot and Elliot, and then it uses that to explore that relationship and fracture it to its ultimate point in season 2 before it begins to resynthesize and bring those things together in season 3. And, like, that's a speeding train that you have to catch if you just came in with Irving ordering a milk, wanting his free milkshake at the beginning of the season.
I do like how Elliot has kind of already done everything he can remotely. Like, it makes a lot of sense. You know, he's not going to be an E to try and get to his computer. He's just going to hack into it.
Yeah. I also like the fact that, like, Irving, like, they really up Irving's power level in this episode, which I thought was cool. But, like, as Elliot's reaching for anything he could use in his bag of tricks to manipulate or get an angle, Irving just cuts his dick off and says, look, any scheme you're thinking, just stop. Just stop and get in my car.
Yep. Because I'm not the guy you need to convince.
Right.
Like, sure, you convince me, but I still got to take you to White Rose.
It's very Samuel Jackson, my name's Pitt, and you ain't talking your ass out of it.
Right. And there's a detective book by Gore Vidal in this scene that he points out, Death Likes It Hot. I don't know what that has to do with the story. I thought somebody might find that interesting, though.
Wasn't that... I thought that Death Likes It Hot was something that featured earlier in the season, wasn't it?
Maybe. I don't remember.
Okay. I thought that was another book that he had name-checked or something. Oh, yeah. That was the book he was listening to as he was driving around, because he just said, I just finished this audiobook.
Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha. All right, so then we go to Angela. She has been taken to this very, very large house, and she's visited by someone who tells her, offers her breakfast and says that Philip wants to speak with her. I don't think anybody was under the, I guess, delusion that White Rose was going to talk to her. I think everybody knew this was not White Rose's crew.
Yeah. I thought it was a mental institution. I thought she'd been committed by somebody.
because she
ignored that phone call from her dad. And she's been acting sketchy. Like, maybe her dad would, like, have her committed to a mental institution. Because it seemed like, you know, a very nice, safe. But it turns out that I think this is just Philip Price's personal mansion, right?
Yeah. And a mansion it is. Holy shit.
His upstate New York retreat, maybe. Not where he actually lives, but where he goes to unwind.
Like one of his smaller houses, probably.
Where he has his illegitimate daughters taken when they get to be too much.
So we go back to Elliot and Mr. Robot being taken to the Dark Army property where Tyrell was holed up. And there they find Dom, Darlene, and Santiago. And Santiago tells Irving that he needs to clean up his FBI mess. And Irving takes Dom and Santiago outside, leaving Leon to guard Elliot and Darlene.
So this is the scene where he realizes the White Rose is watching them.
Yeah, so I had to break this up weird because of all the intercutting later on. I had to break it up weird, and I included that in a later section.
Okay,
but yes, in fact, he does notice the camera here.
So the other blurring of the line of the reality of Mr. Rose and Elliot, or I'm sorry, Mr. Robot and Elliot, is when Irving pulls up, Elliot's in the front seat, Mr. Robot's in the back seat. they both open the door and get out.
Okay.
Because I was really curious when I saw him pull up. I'm like, I wonder how they'll do this. They'll probably have Ellie get out of the back seat, and Mr. Robot will just scoot across the bench to get out with him.
Uh-huh.
But then Ellie's in the front seat. I'm like, what the fuck? And like, Mr. Robot opens and closes the door. So what the fuck? Is that just, is that S-Mail having fun with us? Like, in that's just Elliot filling in his imagination with like the Mr. Robot
it's
has to get out so he has, cause like
it can't be anything else.
Yeah, because if a third door just opened, like Irving would be like, "What the hell? It's a ghost," you know?
Right? Fuck! He'd run screaming into the woods.
Where's my
ex? Always knew it was real.
Yeah. I wondered about that. And the other thing is like, this thing's starting to get so reality bending that I. Part of me is thinking that when you this is all done and you rewatch it a second time, you're going to see a bunch of shit like this to indicate that things aren't what they seem. But yeah. I don't have enough to even speculate on what that might be. Like, there's no fucking way.
Like a further reveal for Elliot and Mr. Robot?
Yeah, there's
Robot.
No fucking way that at some point it's going to turn out that Mr. Robot is real-ish.
I mean, he could pull off his VR goggles and... There's the reveal,
yeah,
but I mean,
wake
other
up in
than
a pod
that,
full of goo with a weird spider robot unplugging
exactly.
it. Like, you just never know.
Short of that, though, I can't imagine another reveal.
Because there's so many ways you could stage that to not break that illusion.
Sure.
Like I said, just have Elliot in the back and Mr. Robot gets out on the same side, like taxicab style. Not sure why they didn't go with that. It's almost like it's so intentional. It's like they want you to notice it, but I have no idea why.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you. So I found it funny that this was, I thought, okay, they're going to take him to the same place that they took Tyrell, and they do, but they take him like Tyrell's shack was already just that, a shack, and they take him to the fucking barn of the shack. I'm like, and when they walk in and say, we've walked into some hillbilly shit here, I'm like, oh yeah, you have.
Yeah.
You totally have.
Yep.
It's bad news. And
it's
I really love
banjos all the way down.
I love the overhead shot. When they're driving in. That
yeah.
I don't know if it was a drone or a helicopter, but either way, it looked like a drone to me.
Well, it's another, like, we talk about that being kind of like a Kubrickian, The Shining kind of detail, and it continues to be so.
It was really cool, though. So Irving takes Dom and Santiago to the chopping block, and this is kind of where we start to leave the actual timeline of the show, and I'm going to break it into character focus here.
Okay.
He takes them both out to the chopping block, and Dom thinks he's going to kill her, but he ends up killing Santiago and extorting her cooperation as the new FBI mole by naming and threatening her family as he chops away at Santiago's lifeless body. Oh, what a grisly scene. The blood spray, the dummy that he's actively chopping at the end.
It's too bad they went with a really shitty digital effect for the first axe wound. Because it didn't even track on his body properly. As he was moving, convulsing, it wasn't moving correctly. It's like, I felt like almost a Snapchat filter. It was really bad. Really bad. And I was prepared to give it the business. But man, with Bobby Cannavale being, like, when he did that whole, Dom, I'm going to need you to verbally signal that you wonder, I forget, like, when he got to that, when he got to that point, I'm like, this is the Bobby Cannavale I want to see.
His veins are popping,
and he's holding
an axe covered in blood.
Yeah.
In the used car dealer getup.
Yeah.
It's fucking frightening. And
it is, in a way that, like... Because the whole time when he's doing this, I'm like, I don't, like, why would this work? But, like, when he's talking about, I guess, what's the play here? I feel like she's making the right play, which is you get along until you've got them dead, you know, flat-footed, right. And then you spring, like, but then is that what Santiago was trying to do?
It didn't seem like it.
But Santiago is also trying to protect Darlene, according to his words, and, like, I just feel like,
because
the other thing is like,
him, but...
I mean, one thing, because I feel like if you just blew your head off here, that would end, because I don't think they're going to go and kill all your family.
Right.
Like, I don't think they're going to go kill Santiago's mom once they kill. So, like, that would be an absolute way to, or if you just said, no, I just refuse, you're going to have to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you find a way to off yourself, that's about the only way you can save yourself from this kind of extortion.
Sure. Or try and work under the guise of helping them. And actively work against them.
That's how they get you. I feel like that's how the Dark Army gets you. They they allow you and your pride and hubris to think that you're going to be able to outcompete them, but you're just always one person with a massive secret dangling over your head, and they are this internationally well-connected, well-funded, well-equipped terrorist organization, and you're just never going to be able to outfight them.
Yeah.
And the stakes, if you try and fail, are horrific.
For you and your family.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I don't know what Dom is really going to be able to do, because like Bobby Cannavale points out here, she is not the same rank. She's a lower rank than her boss, who they already had in her pocket or in their pocket. What can she do if somebody else steps in above her? How much influence can she have for the Dark Army, or even against the Dark Army?
Don't you think it's going to, like, I feel like that's very early on next season, you're going to see that she's getting promoted to,
I would guess that,
Santiago's old position.
Right.
Like, you know, who Santiago himself has given her the speech, right? Like, oh, she's the most talented young, she's hungry, and she's going to be youngest ASAC. Like, I just feel like that's just going to happen.
But I feel like maybe the more interesting option is to put somebody in above her, because that restructures the power balance, where before, like, her boss was the one who's dirty. Now she's dirty under a boss who's clean, and she still has to do the Dark Army's bidding, and she still wants to work against them. There's so many opportunities for drama there.
Get James Comey.
All right, let's just take literal FBI directors from the real world.
Well, golly, Dom, I just feel like, you know, you're not on the up and up with me.
That'd be great. That'd be great. I don't know if he can act, though. We'll have to give him an audition and find out.
No, I don't. Yeah, you're right. He probably cannot. He probably cannot act.
But the exciting thing is, she's not alone, right? She has Dom, she has Darlene and Elliot if she wants them.
Plus, I really like
Mr. Robot too.
I liked her partner. I don't think her partner is as gifted as her, but like the guy who was hungry and wanted some lunch, like, he seems like he's game.
She might be able to go to him and tell him.
And you're
like,
right. Just having although, you know, I don't think she's going to accept much help from Darlene, but having some people that she doesn't know that she can trust, but she can trust, is probably going to be a big, big help.
I think she knows she can trust them more than she can trust the Dark Army, which is the key to them working together. Also, the extortion here could be entirely avoided by just hiring people who don't have families, right?
That's tough.
I know. It limits your pool of talent.
Because you start with no family, and then there's nothing you can, like, unless you forbid breeding as part of your employment. There's like, that can happen to anybody.
It's true. It's true. All right. Dom comes back inside.
Life finds a way, as one scientist
implying once put she's going to have dinosaur babies.
She is. She is. It's going to be half gummer, half dinosaur.
Oh, boy. Just the scaliest of gummers.
Velocigummer.
All right.
Gummosaurus Rex.
Gummosaurus Rex comes back inside, and Elliot realizes White Rose is watching them through a camera on the ceiling, and that someone important must be coming. And then White Rose's guy shows up. What is his name again?
I think everyone's calling him Grant, because that's the first name of the guy who portrays him.
Right.
But holy shit, his arrival.
Yeah.
His arrival as like the Cambodian version of Nancy Sinatra's Bang Bang is playing. Yeah, like, this is, I don't know if that's actually what it is. It sounds like it. It's from this singer, Pan Ron, but she's a Cambodian singer.
Okay.
And this is one of her songs. I could not pronounce the actual name of it, but it sounds like that. And it's very, the other major influence of this season, I think, is Tarantino. And this is a total Tarantino move. Having this guy coming in from a weird cultural remix of a Sinatra song with the sunglasses. Yep. And he just looks badass. But then he's instantly emasculated by Irving, which was also fucking cool.
Right. Irving gets him up to speed on the Dom stuff and tells him, I'm going on vacation. And then when he objects, Irving sets the guy straight.
What a fucking power move.
How do you grab this guy's face? Who the fuck is Irving?
That's what I'm saying. Like, he instantly became a much more interesting character, and I kind of hope that we never see him again.
Irving? Gone?
Yeah. No, I mean, I want to see more Irving, but I'd be totally fine if he's like, you never see him again, because this, you know, he's got a sabbatical, and White Rose is cool with it. But yeah, grabbing him by the face,
it fundamentally changes what I think of Irving.
There's a scene in the first episode of the new Twin Peaks series where Kyle MacLachlan grabs someone by the face for what feels like 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, like, what a fucking power play. But it blew my mind when Irving, who I thought was a middle manager, fixer kind of guy at best, like right around the rank of Leon, grabs Grant by the face, asks him if you've sucked White Rose's cock slash clit, whatever she's working with down there, and then say, I was you before you were you. Fuck off. Like, glad we did this, and calls him. He insults him in front of his men, and there's not a goddamn thing Grant can do about it. Do you think Grant knew this before?
He's got... There's something that keeps Grant from just taking Irving out in this moment. Like,
it could be Bobby Cannavale's blood splatter. Like,
yeah, maybe.
Like, I'm going to check my facts before I go and escalate this any further.
Yeah, it could be that. But yeah, I am surprised at how easily Irving is able to just, I don't know, just wrap this guy up.
Yeah, I really like that, though. Like, anytime you find something new about a relationship that you not even didn't know about but had no reasons to suspect, but yeah. It also felt, I was instantly convinced. Mm-hmm. Like, the combination of Grant's allowing this to happen and just the electric performance that Cannavale put in here, just like the combination is like, well, yeah, of course he fucking just put the kibosh on all of Grant's bullshit.
Right.
And because what's the hell out of him.
The downside of calling this bluff, if it's a bluff,
uh-huh,
is so much greater than the upside,
right,
of calling that bluff.
Right, right.
I'm also curious how he's able to come and go as he pleases. Basically, you know, he talks about the sabbatical.
Yeah,
because when you think of organized crime, like I said earlier, you don't think of getting out of it.
Right.
And I don't think he's being able to do what you want to do at any time.
Right, right. Of being able to, like, it's all when
you don't think of doing your time and being free.
No, whenever it happens, it's always amazing. Like when Cuddy got out of the Avon Barksdale game in The Wire, it's like, oh, that was okay. That was like
and the Herculean efforts it took to do that, you know?
Right. You got to think, like, wow, what is this relationship with White Rose that he is absolutely certain that he can get away with this?
Yeah.
And he got out of the psychosexual relationship with the White Rose.
Right.
With his life, mm-hmm, but still working in the organization.
Yeah. No, it, like I said, it fundamentally changes what I think of Irving, and it raises so many questions about him now.
Yeah.
That I just didn't have, weren't even on my radar before.
Yeah, like suddenly he's Darth Vader in this universe, and he had no idea.
So what's the tremendous upside that he mentions of having Dom? Is it that she has, like, a larger family to exploit?
Oh, I thought he meant the upside was that she's up and coming. Like, maybe Santiago gotten as high as he'd gone, but, like, we're backing this young horse who's a thoroughbred and... Like
and she's way smarter than he is.
Yeah, upside is like a drafting term. Like, you know, there's the better player, but his ceiling's significantly lower than this other guy who's not as proven, but he's got a much higher upside.
Okay.
Like, so I felt like it's more like he knows this is a bill of goods he's trying to sell Grant, and he's just trying to – he's a used car – he's like – he goes into used car mode. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I see why, you know, it's leaking oil and all that, but, you know.
Sure. Okay, then we go to Grant coming into the barn, and Elliot tries to talk him out of killing them by first laying out their entire history of payoffs, murder, and blackmail.
Just in the last 30 days.
Right.
They paid Russia to hack the DNC, which, hello, real world.
The Philip Price Congo move, annexing the Congo.
They backdoored the entire South Korean military?
Yeah, apparently.
That's interesting.
Why would a country allow you to do that? What's the incentive?
I don't think there's... Well, I don't know. Maybe like Irving came and threatened to hatchet their entire family. I don't. But also, like, back. Like,
I don't know. Against a. Why do you think that it was? Government?
Why do you think the South Koreans allowed them? Like the word backdoor to me sounds like it's something they pulled underneath their nose.
Okay. Could be, but to me, like, intentionally building backdoors into software is something someone has to do.
Yeah, it has to. Yeah. You're right.
So. Like, they must be complicit in it, and I don't know why they would do that.
I don't know.
But yeah, regardless, he says he'll reveal it all if they kill him, and then he offers to aid White Rose in getting her project moved to the Congo, which apparently she likes because she has Leon kill all of the Dark Army, and then gives a farewell speech to Grant before he kills himself, and Leon immediately busts out a computer so Ellie can get to work on that Congo plan.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of funny, like... Oh, you got a plan? Here's a computer, and I want you to do it right now. And Elliot does it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. I thought it was pretty, like, so the hack I thought was kind of like a fairly elegant that, like, Elliot's able to see all these moving pieces, and he sees that you can exploit this this African relief effort to bypass, like, all these border security things to expedite the fact that you're trying to help people and essentially hijack that for White Rose's purposes.
Yeah.
I thought
it was
that...
humanitarian aid to Iran? Is that what they said?
Was it?
I thought so, yeah.
I thought it was Africa, which would make sense of moving to Congo.
Well,
but
I
then
mean,
again,
regardless,
the Middle
moving
East
it...
is just across the Red Sea from Africa, so
yeah.
They're
using the humanitarian shipments, the aid shipments, to move the Congo stuff to a foreign country so that they can more easily move it over to the Congo.
Yeah, in
like kind of an intermediary that is allowed to have shipments from the U.S.
Indeed.
Yeah, and so that works out.
Yeah, the fact that Elliot is this good. He can do in one night what Grant couldn't do in 3 months with the full might of the Dark Army.
Right.
That's pretty crazy.
It almost stretches credibility
a
little
almost,
too far.
But like, I guess the idea that he is such an unconventional person that can see things from such unconventional angles.
Well, here's why I view it as not super credible is because White Rose is that herself. And White Rose has had her finger
why do you
in
say
every...
that?
Because she has manipulated governments across the board and powerful people across the board, that the fact that she wouldn't look for humanitarian aid shipments and try and exploit that herself seems a little bit blind to me, like tone deaf for who White Rose is.
Yeah, but I mean, they're nakedly asserting that I guess I'm surprised to hear you say that because I feel like I'm the one that's had more trouble with that. But now, like, I ultimately, like, in this moment... when he stood up and says, I own everything and I will and what makes you feel that you're better because I did in one night something that you failed to do for months. Like,
I guess that's the important
thing. I totally bought it.
She has entrusted her underling with this or her lover, whoever he is.
Seems like that's a special role in the organization. She always has this kind of paramour type of thing. Well,
right, but she didn't have her own fingers in it. And that's the thing. Like with Philip Price, with all the manipulation of the governments and the currencies, she had a direct role to play in that. With this, she delegated. And her delegate did not get it done.
Yeah.
Whereas I fully believe that if White Rose had her fingers in this as well, it would have gotten done without Elliot's intervention.
So she was backburnering this to shine on Philip Price, is what you're saying?
No. I just think that she could not possibly handle all of the moving pieces that needed to happen.
Okay.
And so she delegated, and that was a mistake because her delegate did not perform.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. Do you think that at some point Elliot needs to be told what this project is, very similar to the way Angela was?
I think we need to be told this project.
We do, next season we have to learn.
Like, I kind of feel like as good as the show is, like, I don't know, because that's the thing. Like, good shows can get away with shit that normal shows can't. But, like, the responsible critic and engaged fan in me wants to say that if we go through next season and we still don't know the nature of the Washington Township project, my 24/ Lost alarm bells are going to start going off, and I'm not 24. My X-Files and Lost alarm bells are going to start going off, and I'm not sure how I can ignore those.
I mean, that's one of the big
things.
Because
a track record for shows that continue to ask ever more big questions and refuse to deliver on what is essentially the central premise on the show, they don't have great track records for ending in a satisfactory way. Slightly controversial viewpoint, but certainly I don't think anyone would argue that the X-Files did a particularly good job of rewarding careful fans' attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be real worried if we get through even mid-season the next year and don't know exactly what the fuck we're up against. Is White Rose delusional? Is she actually a crazy person that's chasing the impossible, or does she have, you know, tech that works?
Sure.
I need to know that. Yeah. And Elliot does too.
And we have a lot of people's opinions on that, but we don't quite know enough
to
our own opinion.
Yeah, because we're about to talk about it, I'm sure. But when Philip, you know, I watched Philip talking about we're talking to Angela and nakedly talking about how he's trying to manipulate her and stuff, my first thought is like, well, how the fuck do we know you're not trying to manipulate her now, that you're not trying to tell her a bunch of bullshit that about White, or like, you're too stupid to understand what White Rose is trying to do, or you're lying just to further manipulate Angela for your own selfish purposes. Like, there's like, I don't believe that everything he says is gospel.
Okay.
In fact, I don't even know that he, I don't know that I 100% believe that he's her father still, because that would be an excellent way to manipulate Angela.
Well, that was one of the things that I disliked so much about season two, is that it did not push forward what I view as the main plot at all. And it kept us in the dark until the very, very, very end of the season.
Yeah.
On what stage two was, right?
Right.
If they pull that again and leave us till the very end of season four with this project still being up in the air, I will feel similarly disappointed, I guess.
Right.
In the pace of the season, because that is the going concern to me. There are two going concerns. How is Elliot going to take down the 1%? What is his plan for that?
The point
and 1%. What is White Rose's project? Those are the biggest questions I have at this point.
Okay.
So I hope they start to fill in some answers and then let the story play out, but we'll see.
Right.
What do you think about Leon's role in this whole thing?
He's badass. Like, you know, his name's Joey Badass.
Hell
and
yeah.
He delivers the goods. I thought that was super. I mean, obviously he's acting under orders, but and he kind of thinks like, is there a better way to stop this than just shooting everybody in the head? But White Rose and everyone who works for her seems to be under the illusion that nothing is of permanence.
Yeah, that's the thing. So this bathtub scene, we should talk about this speech that she gives to Grant.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Know that I will find you as soon as our project is complete."
Right.
She truly believes that she's going to be able to bring back dead people here.
Yeah.
What is this project? I'm so... I don't know. In one way, I'm like...
It's a flux capacitor.
You know, I'm antsy. I just really want to know. And this is the best kind of suspense, I guess. But if we had not had much else going on, I would be like, this is too long. We needed to know something by now.
Did you look up what Grant said to her or said to Elliot before he shot himself in the head?
No.
Because he says this Chinese line, which is, according to Reddit...
It's fuck you. Fuck you, Elliot.
It's translated into take care of her.
Okay.
So does that mean Elliot is going to get some spontaneous advances next year?
I don't know. Maybe.
Will Elliot taste the rainbow that is White Rose?
Could be. Could be.
I hope it's a regular. I hope White Rose tastes like conventional Skittles. I don't like that. I don't like the wild berry.
Or the tropical.
The tropical. Yeah. This regular Skittles is fine, please.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to Angela. She's speaking with Philip. He explains to her that White Rose has manipulated her to get petty revenge on him. This is kind of a little out of order.
Because that's the thing. Like, this everything that we just talked about is masterfully edited and riffle shuffled like a 52-card deck of cards.
Right.
In with the other one. Like, almost like every other sentence. And that is normally maddening.
Yeah.
But it was spellbinding here because I was so invested in, like, I felt like I knew what was going on with Angela, but I still thought that the performances were good enough and Angela's been acting so bizarre that I was kind of interested in seeing how she takes this. And also I was hoping that the whole time Price would actually give me some concrete information about White Rose, but man, they just effortlessly interleave these two completely disparate events and people and circumstances and stakes.
Yeah,
in a way that was enthralling.
Mr. Robot has nailed that throughout this season.
Yeah.
I think back to like when Dom discovered Tyrell's hideout, right?
Yep.
That those three things were riffle shuffled together so seamlessly.
Yep.
And I like how the themes kind of support each other in these scenes where like you've got Elliot talking about honesty with Grant, right?
Right.
Am I being more honest for you now? And on the other side, you've got Angela being told, you got Philip coming clean to Angela about being her father, giving her some honesty here. Potentially, maybe we should talk about whether or not he's lying, but I like how they kind of shuffle not only the scenes, but the themes together.
Right.
So yeah, he explains that White Rose manipulated her, and he tells her the story of meeting her mother before finally revealing that he's her biological father. Angela admits to her father that the bombings were her fault and gets very sad about the lies that she believed. And then she asks Philip for retribution on White Rose, and in response, he tells her to accept that she's been conned and find a way to live with what she did.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I feel like unless I have concrete evidence otherwise, I don't believe anything that Philip says.
Okay. That seems reasonable.
Because it's context. It's all set in the context of him coming clean about the manipulations he's done on her thus far. To me, that's just a dead giveaway.
And this could be him striking out for that petty revenge against White Rose. Exactly. Like, I'm going to re-flip you to my side.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly the point I was trying to get to.
But this is something that a lot of people, when we had the Angela flashback, were speculating about. Is Philip her real father?
And I remember,
is White Rose her real
father?
Both
of us were not big fans of that.
No, we weren't.
That idea.
And I'm only like reflexively kind of against that idea because it feels like too matchy. I don't need everybody related to everybody and all these connections.
You can make a world feel too small. Like the Star Wars prequels, when you find that Yoda and Chewbacca used to hang out together. I'm like, really?
Uh-huh.
In a galaxy of quintillions across 120 right. light years, this Jedi Master hung out with the guy who eventually owed a life debt to Han Solo.
Right.
Really?
It seems a little too convenient for me.
And Luke's dad, one of the most important people in the galaxy, made C-3PO. Like some of this stuff is just like, come on, stop the bullshit already.
I don't have a real great argument against it other than that emotional one of,
yeah,
it feels a little too matchy.
I felt like in the moment, though, it felt right. And I don't really have a problem with it.
No, and I think the performances really are really good here. Portia does a great job. I don't know. Chili dad. What's his name?
Philip
I have no
Price.
Idea. Philip Price.
Chili dad.
I don't know.
What the fuck? They did a good job. And also, like, because again, I have not liked the sleepwalking, childlike, broken-minded Angela.
Right.
And I feel like when she's sobbing here that she's like getting emotionally reset and you know, maybe she's being freshly manipulated by Philip Price, but she's going to be a more interesting character to me. Mm-hmm. And she's the one that, like, I want her and Elliot to talk about what White Rose's plan is, or how, like, it might not be her real plan, but like, what does Angela understand about it? Yeah. And also there's like, isn't there like 30 some minutes that this conversation that happened between White Rose and Angela that we weren't privy to that, like, completely flipped her script? I would love
there
to
is,
know,
yeah,
like, what that is. Or maybe we can see Elliot go through it next year.
Right. And how, you know, her doppelganger or potentially herself.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if White Rose brings in Elliot and she's about to tell him her plan? She's like, I need to speak to the other guy. And it goes to Christian Slater and we're not privy to any of that. You know,
okay,
like,
yeah,
31 minutes later, the camera shakes and it's back to Elliot. And he's like, what just happened? I'm like, I smell, you know?
Yeah, I could see that happening.
Well, I hope not. But if it's done this well, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like I'm saying, like, a lot of this stuff, if you just told me bullet points, I'd been like, oh, Christ, this finale is going to fucking suck. Mm-hmm. But when you see it all put together, set to music and shot impeccably and acted expertly, it's great.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as they're leaving ambiguous, they are also, in other areas, pushing forward. And that's the thing that, to me, distinguishes this season from season two, because season two, I felt like I got no answers.
Yeah,
I was only raised further questions. In season three, I feel like they've been doing both, and that is important to me as a viewer.
Totally.
So, having executed the Congo plan, Elliot uses Dom's credentials to gain access to Sentinel. Dom runs into Darlene and tells her that she's a monster for ruining her whole life and she deserves eternal torment, I guess. Elliot searches the Sentinel files and finds out that Romero didn't back up the files. Someone else did. I can't believe Elliot's... This is Elliot's wet dream. Like, Elliot has never been given easier access to a system. And at the same time, like, harder access, right? Like, everything he's been through to now has brought this access. But Elliot's just sitting there while Dom signs into her computer.
Yeah.
And double-clicks the Sentinel file for
it. It's so matter-of-fact, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's great. And then there's this tremendous scene with Dom and Darlene.
Pure and utter agony.
Yeah.
I want your rest of your life be pure. Don't ever think that you're a good person.
live with that and die with
you
that.
You have ruined my whole life because of you. Live with that and die with that. And she's just, yeah, Grace Gummer is really fucking good.
It's incredible.
Now, did you think that there was a chance that they're going to leave who actually did? I was actually starting to groan like, oh, God, next season or after. And then, like, nope, instantly they revealed that it was Mr. Robot, which I kind of suspected. One of the reasons
it could only be two people, Tyrell or Mr. Robot.
Yeah, because anyone else, they're already dead, and it doesn't, you know, it can't be Trenton because she's the one that clued him into it. So yeah. I guess it could have been Tyrell, couldn't it have?
Yeah, he was at the hack. Like, I'm trying to think of who could have done it, and we know that he had the keylogger installed, but it had to be someone like local,
right?
And it was Mr. Robot. Okay, we go to Elliot riding the subway home with Darlene. She brings up the time that he asked her about Kevin McAllister, the snowman. And he says, that's the night the dad pushed him out the window, and he wanted to talk about it. But Darlene tells him their dad didn't throw him out the window. Elliot snapped and jumped out, which I think was a pretty big fan theory. That was kind of on everybody's radar.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of inconsistencies in Elliot's story, and we find out that they were, in fact, there for a reason.
Yeah. And the fact that this also kind of tracks because it seems like something Elliot would do to take the pain of losing his father and recontextualizing his father as a monster so that he can replace that pain with anger and hate.
Yeah.
But boy, it must have been tough for Mr. Alderson.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You think back of that movie scene and like how fucking brutal it is to die with that, like the fact that you've just not been able to reach your son and you're not going to be able to help him.
Yeah. And I like the sort of mirror image here of Darlene and Elliot. Like, Darlene in this episode has to deal with the realization that she has totally ruined someone's life. And Elliot's kind of coming to a better understanding of himself and how his father wasn't the monster that he thought. There's kind of like a crossing of paths here.
Also, simultaneously, the reveal that Mr. Robot is not as scary as he thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought all that stuff really was good, and it kind of put a bow on all the development they've done, really, for the last three seasons.
Yeah. And Darlene has a nice moment here. What's that?
I was going to say, the other thing is, like, we've never seen Elliot be scary. Like, a little bit, like, when he grabs Darlene or Angela or something like that. But, like, this little boy version of Elliot's capable of taking a baseball bat, throwing himself out the window, like, doing, like yeah. Elliot could go to really dark places. And I wonder if we will see that ere this series is over. Like Elliot be
we
terrifying.
Could, especially with that after credits sequence that we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting. Yeah, but I like Darlene's moment at the end where she tells Elliot, look, I trust you just like Trenton did.
Right.
She clearly sent this email because she trusted you.
Right.
Basically letting him know that there are people that he can lean on.
Yep.
You know, and the idea that she is his memory, essentially.
Yep.
She's there to kind of have his back.
She's
and I like that.
His burnt CD.
Yep. So Elliot decides to ride the train a little bit longer and Darlene leaves. And he uses that time to talk to Mr. Robot about why he exported the keys. Mr. Robot thinks they should see this thing through, but Elliot needs to fix it for himself so he can live with himself. And he also has a new mission, which is to take down the 1% who rule the world. It's basically all of them.
The 1% of the 1%.
Right.
So he's 0.01%.
But he's dealt with the like 0.0001%, which is White Rose, and he's not had much luck. So
yeah,
I don't know about this taking down the full 1% or 0.1% here.
Right. Yeah, good luck. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting because like now... Yeah. He sees the enemy a lot more plain, and he knows that it's not E Corp is just a symptom of the fuckery going on.
Yeah.
That he has to actually. And the thing is I guess what Elliot still doesn't realize. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's scary about it is his mantra in the beginning of this episode where he's like, I brought this on myself. I'll never learn. I brought this on myself. He like repeated that. I'll never learn. Yet we're supposed to get all pumped up about him going after 0.01%.
Uh-huh.
Like, but he's going to, you know, how is this going to blow up in his face?
I mean, it's, remember that scene with Irving where they're looking at the rooftop party
mm-hmm.
and he essentially says, those are the people.
You can never cancel these people's party.
Right. They're going to party regardless of what you're doing. And if you kill, like, let's say you walk into that party and you kill all those people, mm-hmm. more people are going to rise to take their place. This is a systemic thing. This is not it is the people's fault, but it's not just the people's fault who are doing it. I wonder if he's going to fight it from a systemic, I guess, a systemic sort of way, or if he's going to look at these people as the problem. Because I feel like, well, one could be effective, the other is certainly doomed to
fail.
Well,
failure. That's why I was getting with the I'll never learn, is like, even if you take down to 0.01%, like, is the problem the disparity in the division of wealth that allows wealth to be concentrated? Because, like, at best, you would fix things for a generation or two.
Right, that's what
but
I mean.
You always have to have, like, you'd have to have, it's kind of like Batman, what happens after Batman dies. You know, unless you have, you've groomed another Batman, then what the hell? So, like, that's the thing. Like, it's this struggle will never, I don't think it'll ever end.
Right.
Unless, you know, White Rose has some kind of cosmic mind control, time manipulating, the universal simulator thing that can fix all this.
But as a scene, it is super effective to get us pumped up for the next phase of,
sure,
of Mr. Robot.
Sure.
And it's honestly something that I have been looking forward to for a very long time. We've been talking about it all season. This seems like the inevitable outcome where Elliot realizes that the fight he needs to fight is not against this perceived society, but against the people who are making it that way.
Right.
And it might be a flawed plan. It might be the wrong target to attack, but that's kind of what we've been waiting for Elliot to do.
Right.
So Mr. Robot tells him that he copied the keys in case they were wrong, but also because it's what Elliot would have done. And with the help of Superman and Doc Brown, Elliot decrypts the keys and emails them to E-Corp.
Yeah, I love the fact that Superman's literally turning the time back, and the key was embedded in the Marty McFly and Doc Brown Halloween costume.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it's also good. And when he goes to send the keys to E-Corp, the email he addressed that he's using is Falcon's Maze. At protonmail.ch. Okay. Falcon's Maze is the first game in the list of war games that Matthew Broderick stumbles onto.
Oh.
It's the one that kind of leads him to Stephen Falcon.
I gotcha.
Or gets him caught up in that quest. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But you get Superman turning back time. Is that relevant to the story as a whole? Do you think this is like hinting at the further development of the project of White Rose, or is this just
it works both
turning
ways.
Back 5-9?
It works both ways. Like all Sam Esmail could say in a straight face, well, yeah, this is all metaphor about even the episode Shutdown -R is a way to
reboot a system.
So again, Sam can stand up in a straight face and say, well, all this time travel metaphor and going back to the future and all that stuff is a symbolic of us rebooting to season one. But now, you know, it's kind of like there's been some of those video games like Star Control 2 is a good example. Like I remember I played that and I fucked it up so bad that I got to a state I couldn't win.
The Urquans were
the
coming. Urquan, in.
Yeah, there's like, oh, shit, the Urquans are going to take over the galaxy and I guess I can just watch. All right, go back to a previous save. Try again. Now I know what I got to do. I can do like
very much that feel.
It felt a lot that like I fucked up the first time, but I'm going to set it back now. There's already many, many signs that this is not going to be the magical system restore that we think it is.
Right.
That's like my TOTDAB, that one thing that the acronym I use to describe when there's dissonance between what the show is telling me is true and what I perceive to be true with my knowledge of socioeconomic, political stuff. And the idea that the country can be in an economic shambles for months and martial laws be declared, and then you can just reset the financial system back to the time before that happened. Like, there's been so much lost productivity and money, and that's like one of those all the king's horses and all the king's men, not sure you can put that back together again.
And I think that's important to keep in mind going into season four, because I'm not entirely certain that the show is just going to let Elliot get away with this.
I don't think, and again, I think a lot of the after credit sequence, other than introducing Vera back and getting his hype for that, was the show calling bullshit on itself, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like the prostitute was Aaron saying, I don't know about all this. And I don't know if Marx is the solution, but like, I do like the fact that somebody in universe is like, okay, but great, now I got a bunch of student loan debt. Also, the economy is still going to be in a shitter, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm afraid that they will have it be a clean reboot.
And that won't make sense, but I'll swallow it because I like the show. But I'm hoping that season four is even more of a clusterfuck because you've undone it. It hasn't really made any difference. And also, you're trying to fight the Dark Army or work within the Dark Army, or I don't know.
I'm trying to see how White Rose's plan meshes with E-Corp and E-Coin, because White Rose is clearly cool with this whole 5-9 thing going back to the way it was.
And cool with it not. Like, I think that you could say that White Rose gives no shits either way.
But what purpose did that serve? I guess to get the annexation of Congo.
Yes.
Which was the ultimate goal all along.
Yeah, like White Rose will do whatever Elliot wants as long as he can deliver on that.
But there was absolutely no reason at that point for her to give Philip the vote for E-Coin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why someone who's going to spite him in this very petty way, why she would vote for, or why she would convince China to vote for the E-Coin thing, or I guess abstain from the vote or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Why? Why give Philip anything he wants in that case? After he's already given you the thing that
so
you wanted.
So you can have him making kissy faces at you in the Mar-a-Lago bar as your slide. I mean, like, does it amuse him to be like, oh, yeah, wow, we really work together, and as you're fucking him?
I don't know.
Something that small as Philip Price. That's the thing, like, it's so weird because simultaneously for White Rose, the stakes are huge and cosmic and also just really petty and banal.
Yeah.
Which is a fascinating character portrait.
I thought I had pinpointed that as a weakness in White Rose, but right. It doesn't seem to have played out that way.
And also,
yet.
Like, I felt like she genuinely, like, we didn't talk about this too, but, like, I felt like there was genuine emotion in her goodbye to Grant. And,
yeah.
And like, you know, this wasn't like a disposable asset.
Sure.
Which, that's the thing. Like, White Rose is a really fascinating and complex
But she
villain.
Doesn't believe she's disposing it, is the thing. That's the fucked up wrinkle in time.
But
here.
Is she crazy or, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah, so that after credit sequence, we get Darlene talking to a hooker and about, like, you know, reversing a 5-9 and how that would affect them economically, and then Vera shows up looking for Elliot.
Right.
At his front door. And if you forget, Vera is the guy from season one who had who Elliot, like, sent to prison, I think, and then broke him out.
So it was Shayla's drug dealer.
And made him kill his brother. It was
Shayla's drug dealer, and he found out Elliot found out that he was drugging and raping her and beating her repeatedly. And Elliot cracked his Twitter code that allowed him to put together, like, you know, police, like and turn that all to the police. So it's like kind of like
his Twitter quote unquote code.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what was it? It was some stupid shit.
Yeah. It wasn't very clever.
Like seashells or bullets and stuff like that. But like it's allowed him to blow, like he was running this black market in plain sight, and the cops found him and arrested him. And then there was this plot that he has to get him out of prison or Shayla's going to be dead. And turns out Shayla's dead in the trunk the whole time. This guy's a bad dude.
Right.
Don't know why he's doing back. I don't know how he's connected to the overall plot. It seems like a fundamentally less interesting place for the show to go, but fuck me if I'm going to second guess Esmail at this point.
Sure. Yeah, season three has renewed my trust.
Yeah.
In the creators of this show.
And the fact that he can learn from things that don't work and, you know, things that could work and
yeah.
This has felt all together much tighter and more important season.
Absolutely. I think, you know, the combination of moving the plot forward while keeping certain things, key things, ambiguous, with, like, having a lot of action. And POVs, most importantly, POVs that we can trust.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt like I was having the wool entirely pulled over my eyes this season, which left me as a viewer much more grounded in the story. Whereas season two, I never found my footing at all. And it felt very disorienting, and I did not like it.
Yeah.
So return to form for Mr. Robot this season, in my opinion. And I am super excited for season four. Can't wait for it.
Yeah. Yeah. What else we wanted to do? We talked about the whole thing.
Okay. Let's get on to some feedback. Yeah.
It threw me when the prostitute referred to as those damn essays. I never thought I thought Vera was like Eastern European, but apparently he's supposed to be Latino.
I guess. I don't know.
Hmm.
He's or Maybe she has.
He's actually more
not pinpointed what he is. I don't know.
Yeah, he's more Franco from fucking Spring Breaker than he is anything.
He sure is. He just needs some long stringy dreads.
Yeah, like he's a man without a country. He's just like from Douchistan or something like that. The People's Republic of Douchebag. God, yeah, I'm not looking forward to Elliot mixing up with this guy.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Hey, before we get to feedback, I want to tell you about this week's sponsor, which is Sonos. And Sonos would like the opportunity to fill your house with beautiful music and awesome sounds from your television, because that's what they do. They sell a bunch of wireless speaker technology. It's awesome. You got a home theater experience. You got whole house party dance remix possibilities. You don't have to run any crazy speaker wire anywhere. It uses Wi-Fi, not Bluetooth, so you don't lose your signal when you're going from room to room, or if someone has to leave temporarily DJ parties or DJing your party.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than when the DJ goes to the bathroom and the
music starts wobbling out, or like you guys, like a lot of times I'm the DJ. Or if I go out and flip burgers, it starts cutting out, and that's not cool. You want it to be everywhere. Plus, the audio mesh you can stitch with Sonos is truly impressive. You can have these boxes across different rooms. You can label them as such. You can have each room playing something individually, or you can have them all playing the same thing. It's great for parties. It's great for home theater, especially if you've got installs like mine where it's not easy to run those cables. All you got to do is plug it into power, download the Sonos app, and within minutes you will have a very, very nice home theater setup going.
It walks you through the whole thing. It's super easy to set up.
And like all the individual speakers just sound amazing, because I've got the bass unit, I've got the sub units, and I've got a bunch of these the one speakers. And the new version of the one speakers has Amazon Alexa baked right into it. What can you do with Amazon Alexa?
What can't you do with Amazon Alexa if I were the cheesiest man alive?
Can you undo the 5.9 hack?
Can you send an email to eCorp? Absolutely, you can.
You could.
You absolutely can send emails through it. You can send text messages through it.
Yeah.
I think you were telling me about how your son has taken to calling you through
Somehow he was able to make a call through, just like found the relevant app and made a phone call through this thing. But more germane to the point, you can use it to skip tracks.
Sure.
You can use it to increase the volume, and it's super awesome in like a kitchen setting where your hands are busy.
Yes.
And you might not be able to just go run over and grab your cell phone and do something. And it's obviously good for Amazon integration, like ordering things, getting updates on news and weather, things like that. And you probably
noticed it throughout the season of Mr. Robot. There is actually a tie-in with Mr. Robot that they do called the Daily 5.9. If you say, Alexa, give me the Daily 5.9, like Dom did in her apartment, that is actually a thing that works, and you can play a game with it. It's kind of neat.
So be like Dom, and well, no, we can't be like Dom anymore because she sold her soul.
She did,
to the Dark Army to keep her 4-year-old nephew from getting his chest hatcheted open by one crazy Bobby Cannavale.
Would have been really funny
if you don't have any Asian hacker gangster connections, then literally nothing can go wrong. Be like Dom and get Alexa up in your life.
Sure.
Through Sonos' speaker technology.
Right now, it's cheaper than ever to do that because Sonos is offering the listeners of Mr. Robot 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. So like, let's say you already have Sonos products. You can go there and buy speaker stands, which I'm about to do myself. The offer is available for a limited time only.
One, because the one thing, my basement. Basement has no Sonos coverage, and boy,
you could get one down there easily.
I know. I'm gonna take advantage of this offer that you're in the middle of pitching.
Awesome.
So want to get in there. Stands. I still want speakers.
You better do it quick because it's available for a limited time only, and it can't be combined with other discounts or promotions. So don't even try. But if you use the promo code ROBOT10, it's capital ROBOT10 at Sonos.com. You can get that offer. Take advantage of it.
10%, that's a deep cut. That's like hatchet to your chest kind of cut. But I don't know where I'm going with that. Sonos, there's awesome. Tis the part of the podcast where I pitch clubs. Baldmove.com. If you go to club.baldmove.com, you can, and I promise you, hardly any singing.
Yeah, we've done the singing Christmas already. This is not the one.
There's hardly any singing in the club.
So don't let that put you off. But you can. But what it is, there's a lot of love. There's a lot of support. Because the only way we can do shows like Mr. Robot and other shows like it, the smaller boutique-y shows, is because people actually support us to let us do this on a full-time basis and take the time to do the detailed analysis and read the feedback and watch the show and take all the notes and produce this podcast and get it to you, your iPods and your Androids and otherwise just into your ear holes is the club. It's our primary source of revenue, and we're proud of that. We're primarily a listener-supported podcast. And you can go to club.baldmove.com to get a bunch of extra features like ad-free podcasts. You don't have to listen to me pitch this painful singing club stuff again. You can get extra bonus content and video versions of our podcasts. We just did a podcast on Star Wars, as I mentioned in the outset. And if you want to hear the spoiler version, the only way you can do that is be a club member. All kinds of other stuff. There's a pitch for all those things at club.baldmove.com. And if that's not good enough, you can try the whole thing for 30 days for free. Check it out, club.baldmove.com. We have feedback. Since this is our last podcast, not just for Mr. Robot, but pretty much for the year.
But ever.
For 2017, we come back for restart our coverage in 2018. I'm going to give you the email in case you'd like to send us some feedback, but we will not be coming back to consider it until next year. Assuming we get, so that's the thing. Mr. Robot has been confirmed to get a fourth season. I have not heard anything more, like whether they said, hey, wrap it up, Sam, or we'll give you another and you can leave it open-ended, or I haven't heard that, but we are going to get a season four. Email, by the way, robot@baldmove.com. The other thing I want to discuss before we get to the feedback was there was a little discussion in the Reddit about how this would have worked as a series finale. I felt like it wouldn't have been the worst season finale or series finale if it had.
I don't know.
This way.
I mean, still leaving
the looping nature of it felt kind of right. It would have felt right if they never got another season.
I think you could have ended it here, but I would have still had very many questions.
Sure.
Like, what is White Rose's project being like number one?
Your preference,
we don't even know what it is, let alone whether or not it would work.
Your preference, would you rather Esmail be forced to wrap things up next year, or would you rather him having another two seasons to wrap things up? Or you think you should keep going for seven?
No, definitely not any longer than five.
Is that just your like gut feeling of how long you think the story can go?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It depends on what they would reveal in season four or what extra story they could tack onto it. But it honestly feels like maybe a season of setting up a plan for attacking this 1%, as he says, and also finding out what White Rose's project is and whether or not it seems even close to feasible. And then a season for like executing on that plan for the 1% and finding out whether or not White Rose's plan worked.
Yeah, that's the thing.
I think that a two season arc could work here.
If White Rose is delusional, then I think they can wrap it up in one season.
Yes.
But if White Rose has actually got some kind of fucking Doc Brown shit going on, I almost think it needs to.
Right.
Because it would take almost a whole season to expose that and come to grips with the whole scope and like what it's supposed to be, and then another season to like fucking shut it down and return to normalcy. You know, because that's the thing. Like, you know, any hero's journey, the hero arrives essentially back where he started, but with a new piece of information or new outlook on life or something like that.
And I think we need, importantly, we need some backstory on White Rose. Why does White Rose want to believe that this is true, whether it is or not?
And
what's driving her?
Feeding her entire obsession with time.
Exactly.
Like that. Like it's not. It's almost like she's a bit of a Batman villain. Like her thing, she's Calendar Man.
Calendar Woman. Yeah. She's just the big bad.
Yeah. And she's got like, you know, kind of offbeat. Her gang members all wear masks.
Right.
She's got like a non-traditional kind of like look and outfit. And it's a little also a little bit of Two-Face in there because she's got the dual Zhang and White Rose personality. Or one is the mask and one is like, it is very surprisingly superhero when you think about it. Even Elliot with his chinos and his Levi's Dockers, and then he is Mr. Robot as soon as he
He throws up the hoodie.
Yeah.
And cinches that down on his face. Like, there's this the really cool kind of, like, boring-ass, well-grounded in internet superhero, but I dig it. Mm-hmm. I really dig it.
But they've revealed so much about the other characters that I now find myself left only with White Rose as the enigma. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to explore in the next one or possibly two seasons.
Right.
Yeah.
Evan from Atlanta. First off, I got to get a top dab, Branton. I've loved season three, but the final subway station scene felt like such a fucking cartoonish wave the wand and everything's back to normal economic impossibility of an ending. The terrible Mr. Robot Elliot dialogue married with some of the oh-so-modern alt band shouting inaudibly song, the type of song that seems to have 50 incarnations. I literally cringed out loud. How do you cringe out loud? Your face folds in such a way that the wrinkles of skin hit at the speed of sound and make like a whip crack.
I think it's the sucking air through your teeth sound.
Mm. You cringe so hard it's audible. That's a pretty big cringe. There are many ways to deliver a cathartic, satisfying ending within the same plot without doing such hand-holding, cutesy, amateur dialogue delivering direction. There's nothing cinematic or creative or even remotely interesting about the final reveal scene as Mr. Robot explains he did 5-9 all along and saved the keys, and they watered the hell down by embedding it into a fucking Back to the Future dad and son photo.
You're wrong. You're just wrong.
Just copy and paste, son, then the whole world economy goes reverse. Yippee. They sound like Angela. And finally, in an honestly hilarious meta move, you get S-Mail mitigating our complaints as he embodies the audience in a hooker. The economically woke hooker, at least, but still didn't feel like nearly enough antidote for the toxic 10 minutes prior.
Huh. I felt exactly the opposite about it.
As creator and ombudsman of the Tot Dab system, mm-hmm. I agree, because, like, it's not... I'm not going to get shitty in a Tot Dab way until I see S-Mail actually pretend as if the magic wand had been waved and everything's going to go back to normal. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. No,
for all the reasons I've already outlined.
Here's the thing. This end scene is not about... If you think it's about fixing 5-9, okay.
Because I was going to say, that's my attack on the face of the argument, but then there's the subtext, which I think you're about to get.
Yeah, this is not about fixing 5-9. This is about fixing Elliot.
Yes.
You have to understand that Elliot feels immensely guilty about this whole thing, and that undoing the damage he did in whatever capacity he can is the only thing that's going to keep him sane.
Yeah.
In any way, and keep him from just killing himself. Like, he was ready to kill himself two episodes ago.
Right.
You got to understand that. And I think
this is the unfracturing of his psyche.
Right.
A little bit.
Regardless of whether it works or not, this is the thing he has to do for himself.
Right. Right.
So I'm hoping that it doesn't work, honestly. I'm hoping it doesn't go as smoothly as he plans.
Yeah, that's certainly the more satisfying, interesting interpretation of that.
Yeah, and this episode says nothing about that, so don't get too mad about that part.
Yeah. There's plenty of time to lose our shit about Tot Dab next year. We'll see. Dan from Cleveland, which I hear rocks. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Dom this episode. In this episode, Santiago praises her for being this great up-and-gummer.
Oh, Jesus.
Up-and-gummer at the FBI.
I cringe audibly at that?
Yeah. Yet in the sea of red flags, she lacks any common sense that you would expect even the simplest of agents to have. The events leading up to Dom confronting Santiago in the parking garage should have convinced her to see something, say something to, I don't know, anyone in the FBI building. The incompetency of the FBI and Mr. Robot Universe ranks dangerously high on the Tot Dab scale. Well, that'd be the Tot Dib, because it's things that drives Dan batshit, not Aaron batshit. But, I mean, I took a pretty strong stand in that I thought Santiago was played perfectly. If it was any less perfect, I would totally agree with you, Dan, but I totally bought. Maybe I've had one too many pain in the ass, cover your ass bosses, which you're not too sure who he's working for or whether he's on your side or not, but... And those stakes aren't like fucking international terrorists come blow my head off in China. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like it was okay.
I mean, I did too, but...
It's a point, that's the thing. Like,
I think it's a matter of opinion on that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I like to get the viewpoints out there. Finally, we had a final note. Christopher B., Dom might not be able to take a punch, but she can hand out wicked burns all day long. Her last message, utterly brutal. Looks like White Rose actually believes what she's selling. Whether she's crazy or not is up in the air. Her right-hand man didn't seem to believe her, though.
Who? Philip Price, Grant, or Irving?
Dom's right-hand man?
No. White Rose.
White Roses. Oh. I don't know.
Leon? I was going to say, Grant obviously believes her because he blows his head off.
Uh-huh.
Irving, I think, is the interesting question. Because also the idea of taking a sabbatical to write a novel is kind of ridiculous if you thought that you were on the cusp of your former mistress being able to manipulate time and space.
Sure, yeah. You know? Yeah.
Like, he's like the, you know, like White Rose wouldn't take a sabbatical to do shit.
Uh-huh.
She's got to work until her job is done so she can apparently live forever or do whatever she's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you wonder what you would do in Dom's position with your family threatened. Make you a little more sympathetic to the FBI stooge. Always thought that move in the situation is to send the story to every form of media I can think of, but I don't know how far of White Rose's reach is. So that's a good, you know, I talked about just committing suicide. Because, like, you know, you'd rather do that than betray your country, right? And that mm-hmm. would also, like, boy, what would Dark Army do about that? Two high-profile FBI agents, one in the chain of command, gets killed on the same day.
Yeah.
Or offs themselves on the same day. With the same day that security camage was looped or missing. Like, yeah, doing something where you send this information, everything you know, to everyone in every news organization. I still don't know. In Mr. Universe's universe, is everyone on the dole? Like, she's got the Alex Jones type, the Frank, was his name Frank something or other? Or,
yeah, I don't remember.
I just wonder, like, if you would send this to the Washington Post and the New York Times, if there'd be some shady editor going through and being like, oh, this is file 13 material, and he just shreds it all. But everyone?
It can't be everyone.
Like, you might have Fox, you might have MSNBC. Are you going to have them and the Beeb and NBC and NPR and
the Guardian and the Sun Times? Like,
right.
Every single, because you could get this out to all the community
the
newspapers.
London yeah.
Like, get this out to 300 community newspapers across the country. It's kind of hard to deny.
Well, they're all owned by Garnet, so.
Okay, yeah.
It all goes to the same submission box, and so it's, right. It's just the one guy.
Get it to Vice, get it to Medium, get it to HuffPo, get it to
WikiLeaks,
get it to all, send it to Snowden. Everybody.
Send it to Snowden at Russia.net.
That's
pretty solid, because what are they going to do? Kill you and your entire family when you put them on blast?
Right. It would just be admitting guilt, essentially.
But
how do you track them down?
And also, you would be looking behind your back the rest of your life.
Absolutely. But I don't. Does that bring them down, though? It would expose them, but what could actually
Grant
bring them down?
Grant asserted that we can survive a leak, but Grant, I don't believe, because he's wrong. He's demonstrably wrong about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he actually has a good handle on all this.
I'm just trying to think how that plays out. Okay. So what Dom really needs here is Elliot's information to pinpoint specific people that they can go in and take out, right? Because without that information, you're saying, okay, well, they bought the FBI, or they've extorted the FBI, but who? Who in the FBI? How do you find that out? They've extorted high-ranking political officials. How do you find out who that is? Elliot has the keys to that. Elliot could potentially blow that wide open.
Right.
But without that information, it doesn't do much good to even know that the Dark Army, because they know the Dark Army exists. They just don't know exactly how it operates. Dom knows the Dark Army exists.
Well, but as soon as she said that, even her own partner was talking about, like, hacker ghost stories. Like, I don't think...
But specifically about, like, White Rose, not the Dark Army itself.
Oh. Okay.
But if you were to say, oh, there's a ringleader, but who? Who is that?
Hmm. Okay.
How do you track that person down and figure it out and figure out who they've bought?
I don't know. Cyber terror is kind of a fascinating topic because... it's one thing to say you got plausible deniability when you find an American operating in some foreign country doing some shit and he's not wearing a uniform, but mm-hmm. he sounds like fucking Ben Affleck from Good Will Hunting. Like, okay, yeah, sure, you're not an American, but like,
when you've tunneled through seven proxies across all seven continents, like, how the fuck do you track that shit down?
Yeah.
I mean, especially since, like, it's already bad enough, and we're talking about the hackers are just doing it for the love and the lulls and whatever, but when the second you get states actually sponsoring those people and you get powerful corporations doing that, like, man, we are living in some fucking interesting times, which, if you know, is a Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times, because we're about to enter an age where you can't trust any video you watch, you can't trust any audio clip you hear, and where we are like our society is being split along the lines of fake news and reliable news, and like, I don't fucking know. I think it's interesting that of all the times that Mr. Robot could have been relevant to come out, and probably any time in the last 7 years, it would have been no one had batted an eye. Right now, we're at the crux of all these crazy new technological destabilizers and what's that fucking Silicon Valley buzzword? Disruptors.
Sure.
That yeah. is, you know, and like, where even like Facebook execs are like, I don't know that we did a good thing creating this social media thing. Like, this might be destroying discourse in Western society.
Yeah, it's like opinion has become the only thing that matters, and it's informed by because when you can't trust anything you read, hear, or see,
right?
Your preconceptions about things are the only thing you can trust.
It's like, you fall back on common sense, but in the modern age, we've seen time and time again where
it's less effective.
Common sense leads you in the wrong fucking direction. And even if it's right, the idea that a person can get their hands around an understanding of a situation just operating as an island unto themselves, any kind of complex situation,
and that's one of the things I think Mr. Robot does really well, is it grapples with that idea of cause and effect not being quite what you think it might be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Elliot has done a thing that he very much believes will fix a problem that he perceives, and it's turned out it's completely backfired in his face. He did something that now he deeply regrets, and that has not only not fixed anything, but has made matters worse.
Yeah.
But it looked like such a good idea at the time, mm-hmm. to him. So now he's actively trying to undo that, and he has undone it as far as we can tell. But what does even the undo process look like? Does that just make things worse? Where does that train end?
Philip Price comes out and says his official position is, everyone knew how much money they owed us, so we're just going to go ahead and add 3 months of late payments and interest rates, and ha 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 ha. You know, I was like, I wonder if they could pull that shit. Because then they play that idea a little bit in season two, where like an old lady was, her house was being repossessed, even though she had all the bank statements. And yeah. That's to say, how do you walk that back? How do you walk 3 months of lost wages and people losing their houses and their jobs and their cars and just a massive destruction of wealth? That, how do you ever put that back?
Yeah, I mean, it's that idea of unintended consequences and sort of genie out of the bottle kind of thing that might not be able to be undone.
Right. And what will it do to Bitcoin?
I don't know. I mean, it's probably crushed it, I imagine.
What will it do to the eCoin, or rather?
Oh, yeah, eCoin, I don't know, once the U.S. dollar is back in full effect.
Right. Jesus Christ, Bitcoin's almost up to $18,000. That's the other thing.
Nice.
It's gone crazy.
Bald Move owns a little bit of Bitcoin.
during the span of Mr. Robot, Bitcoin is essentially, like, isn't that another kind of interesting synchrosity? That, like, Bitcoin has gone bonkers during the airing of Mr. Robot, because, like, apparently all 400,000 people said, hey, I should look into Bitcoin. I should buy Bitcoin as soon as they heard Bitcoin on Mr. Robot.
Awesome.
Maybe Sam Esmail owns the world's largest stock of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And we're going to find he's actually Samantha Esmail. And she's lounging in some kind of bungalow with Bobby Cannavale.
Yeah. I was going to say he's actually Satoshi.
Yeah, that would be
the long con, dude.
Bravo. Yeah, I was gonna say bravo, Esmail. Bravo, if that's what you've done, you deserve everything you're getting.
Yep.
So that's it. That's the pod. That's the feedback. That's Mr. Robot season 3. Took me by complete surprise. I really expected to do a sullen podcast where this show continues to spin off the rails and we announce that we're not going to do it anymore.
Yeah.
And now it's been easily in the top 5, if not top 2, 3 or 2 shows for 2017, and I can't wait for it to come back.
I feel like in good faith that people will get that joke about Satoshi. By making that joke, I am proving the point about why not a lot of people watch this show. Because that is the kind of joke I can make with the podcast listeners, and I think most of them will get it.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, I've always thought, like, yes,
this show is tailored to a certain audience, I'll say.
But it's kind of Star Trek in that where, like, if you don't understand what a Bessard ram scoop is, it doesn't matter because it's going to be the
Heisenberg
thing.
Or a Heisenberg compensator.
It's going to be the thing that the Enterprise uses to suck fuel out of space, or it's going to be the way that Scotty puts his dick back on the right direction. Like, it doesn't matter. It's the MacGuffin that moves the drama forward.
That's fair.
So, like, It just happens to be in Mr. Robot's universe that so far all this stuff makes sense and even maps the real world hacks. So, like, the more you understand it, the more, like, appreciation you get for the technical details and accuracy. But I don't know why this thing's not being watched. I feel like last season was a definite disappointment. And it turned off a lot of the critics. And I feel like being on USA, like, it's one of those things, like, you only get so many chances to make a first impression. And the fact that you're right, like, there is a form. It seems like all the shows that really gain year over year are the ones that are on Netflix or Hulu that people can check out on the off season and be like, you know, oh, here's Mr. Robot. Jim and Aaron have been talking about it. Let me go watch it. Oh, fuck. I spent $40 to get the 2 seasons on Amazon or iTunes. Nah, fuck that.
I think it's...
I'll go watch Dark.
That's the thing. I think free to stream with Amazon Prime, and a lot of people have Amazon Prime, but
that's true.
Probably not as many as have Netflix.
Hell no.
Yeah. So I feel like it's a smaller of at least the 2, if not the 3 big streaming platforms. So yeah, they should probably look into getting this on Netflix so more people will check it out in the off season.
All right. But thanks. We've had a lot of fun with this year. Thanks for joining us on the Mr. Robot journey. We'll be back the next time. I imagine, like, you know, I can't imagine us not covering season 4 of Mr. Robot.
No. There are a lot of things I would drop way before Game of Thrones.
What if it's Game of Thrones, Mr. Robot, and Better Call Saul?
Fuck.
And I think that's it, because Fargo's definitely...
I could handle those 3. I don't know if you could, because you have a lot to do on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I could handle those 3.
Oh, no, it'd be the 4th, which I just said. I said Westworld, Game of Thrones, and...
Oh, and Westworld? Yeah. It'd either be Better Call Saul or this, for sure, but I don't know which. Don't make me answer that.
Yeah, that's because also, like, what the hell? The HBO's going to have Westworld and Game of Thrones compete on the same night?
Right.
They've
the
lost
same
their
time.
Fucking mind.
HBO and HBO 2.
Right.
One of them was showing Game of Thrones.
They're going to bump Westworld to Cinemax. So they can air it directly across each other, 9 p.m.
And so
Eastern
they can,
Standard Time.
So they can put more softcore porn in there, too, of course. Don't forget that.
Well, yeah, I mean, Westworld would be the show to do it in.
Yes. All right, that's it.
That's it. Robot at baldmove.com. Check us all of our stuff out at baldmove.com. You know, this is not the only thing we do. We just talked about all the other shows we do. We do a lot of movies. We're doing all kinds of fun stuff all the time. And also in January... if you're curious, we do our annual Baldies, which is is it the 4th year running? It's the world's best shitty internet award show, where we talk about the top shows, the top comedies, the top actors, and some fun little categories, and we do a whole bunch of deliberations, and we have a little show that we produce that's going to be coming out probably late January. If you want to see where Mr. Robot ends up with our rankings, things going to make a little bit of noise. I think there are some actors who have distinguished themselves this year.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I could put 5 people on the show in the best actor category, and they're going to probably get cut down by the brutal leftovers competition. But you never know. That's why you got to watch the Baldies. That'll be back in late January 2018. But again, hope you see you sooner than later. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.